Last time my guest was in the studio was back in 2014 when she was Mayor of the City and District of St Albans. And I'm very pleased to welcome her back to the studio again with a new title, the High Sheriff.
It's lovely to be here, Rob, and to see you again.
We all, when we hear the word sheriff, think of the Wild West.
We've had a High Sheriff of Hertfordshire for 1,084 years. And originally, people would want someone to represent them. And they wouldn't be things like planning applications and those sorts of issues. They'd be stealing and killing back then. So basically, they were called the Reeve. I'd have been called a Reeve. And I'd represent the people in the Shire. And each Shire would have one. So a Shire Reeve, Sheriff, Sheriff. So that's how the name happened. That's back in King Edgar's day. So, of course, we were in charge of law and order for many, many centuries. And we were quite powerful. And the king didn't like it, so he took the sheriffs under his auspices and then asked them to collect taxes as well. So that's when you get the Sheriff of Nottingham that's famous in Robin Hood. So this carried on right until Sir Robert Peel started the Metropolitan Police Force in 1829. And then the policing moved to the police and the law moved to magistrates and courts and whatever. But by the time our forefathers went to America, of course, the sheriff was still in charge of law and order here. So automatically, that is how they started. So you're absolutely right. The sheriffs in America have actually come from us.
And you rightly pulled out the two words, Shire Reeve, Reeve being the government official or a magistrate.
Yes, that was the name of the person to represent them within the Shire.
Yeah, yes.
20 of the 63 clauses in Magna Carta are to curb the reins of the High Sheriff. That's quite how powerful they were. And they tended to be aristocrats. In fact, if one looks at the names of who the sheriffs were, they could only be for 1 year because they were so powerful. They tended to go with the big houses. So they'd be of Brockett, of Nebworth and those sorts of things. There's 55 of us throughout England and Wales. And the only things that we still have to do, one is to declare a new monarch, which I pray very much I don't have to do in my year. You'll remember from Her Majesty, the proclamation was at St James's Palace. Then it came to County Hall. I was chairman of the County Council in that year, so I had to oversee that. And the High Sheriff reads the proclamation to the mayors and chairs in the chamber. And then those 10 mayors and chairs go to their towns and city and read it out again. Now, that would have been a man on a white horse, because now Sky News told us before anyone else did. But isn't it lovely how that still continues?
Yes, yes.
And then the other responsibility is to be the returning officer at a general election. And that's a quirky hangover from, I think it was about 1254, when sheriffs started to choose two knights of the realm to represent the Shire in Westminster. So it would have been based on population. And, you know, we have 12 in Hertfordshire. So I had the choice of which count I would like to go to only a couple of weeks ago. So I chose to go to Welland Hatfield, thinking that would be quite an interesting one because it was the Defence Secretary, yeah. Grant Shapps. That was quite amusing. In as much as Defence Secretary, there was a lot of security, plainclothes officers, uniformed officers, and they let me in with my sword without even checking, which I thought was very funny.
Because you do have a uniform, don't you?
It is a uniform. It's called court dress. Prior to Queen Victoria, there'd be aristocrats and they very much show off in their embroidered waistcoats and silk tails, that sort of thing. And she wanted all high sheriffs to be uniform. I think it's something to do with when Prince Albert had died, because if you remember, she wore black for the rest of her life. But the Lord Chamberlain, if you look at what was decreed, it's almost identical to what I'm wearing, which was black velvet with tails, waistcoat, breeches, patent shoes with a buckle on, a jabot, which is the white fluffy necktie, white lace cuffs. Men would have a bicorne hat, which have the two points, a bit like Nelson, and a cut steel sword and cut steel buttons. Now, the buttons are fabulous because when a blacksmith shoes a horse and it rasps the hooves and the nails shine on that angle, that's what cut steel is. So I think I've got about 32 buttons on my outfit, cut at angles so they could shine in the candlelight and no silver polish is required. But they don't make them anymore. So I had to buy literally an antique, you know, 100-year-old gentleman's outfit just to get the button. So don't tell Mr. Brewster how much it cost, but it's worth it for the buttons. And so women have only been really high sheriffs since the 80s. And I think a man probably chose what the women should wear. And it tends to be dark velvet, again, a bit of a coat, really, with just a few buttons. And I quite fancied what the men wore. So I found a wonderful female tailor, Elizabeth Jordan in Tring, who has made me effectively a man's court dress, but with puff sleeves, a faux waistcoat, and a far more of a feminine cut. And it means I can wear a sword because I have breeches. And I think I'm probably the first female High Sheriff to wear a sword, which I did for the children, obviously, Rob. But if I wear a dress somewhere, which means I can't have the sword, grown-ups will get very upset and say, but where's your sword? I went to the lovely Abbey Primary School last week, and they have a master of fencing, a professor of fencing that comes in to teach the children. And he taught me so much about my sword. It's a short dress sword. And the reason it's called that is it hangs just on my hip and it doesn't reach the ground. So imagine, you know, to get a really good sword that can attack people from a long way, one needs a sort of longer one. But it's only got a point at the end because it would be going for the breastplate and actually stabbing in that way. But it is a proper sword. It's an early 19th century sword that now we've all clubbed together to buy, and so we will pass it down to other high sheriffs.
Do you have a hat as well?
A very, very big hat. In fact, I've got three hats. Of course I have, Rob, because I've got one for the rain and one for wind. But my best one I had made in Luton, which is, of course, where hats are made, with the beautiful velvet that matches my court dress. And I found a huge old ostrich feather at St Albans Vintage Market. And so I've got a huge feather in the top there. And in fact, at the general election count, the cameras could only film almost from above. And of course, on the BBC and other channels, they were saying, you know, what an amazing hat, because they didn't all know what a high sheriff was. I think it's trending on Twitter saying, High Sheriff of Hertfordshire's hat has to go back to London Zoo the next day. So it caused a bit of fun.
Let's go back to the beginning. In your youth, you were an athlete.
Yes, I was a 1500 metre runner. Not quite as talented as Phoebe Gill, who you know is about to go to the Olympics. Good luck. She runs down at the track here in St Albans.
Right.
I was second in the UK when I was 17. So I was a runner back then. And I got into politics by accident, really. My next door neighbour used to hand out leaflets for a local party. Her husband died and I offered to help. Saw a spelling mistake. Macquarie End was spelt wrongly. Rang up the number. Don't ever do that. And that was it. Oh, you sound interesting. Then they taught me into being a parish councillor in Wheat Hampstead. And then they taught me into being a district councillor in St Albans. But it was there that I had the great honour of becoming the Right Worshipful Mayor. And I loved that role because that's a non-political, again, traditional role. And when I'd finished that, I was asked to take on culture, heritage and sport. And so things like the museum and gallery, they were my project, and several leisure centres, and in Harpenden, the Eric Morecambe Centre as well. So that was tremendous. Then they asked me to be a county councillor. So I went to county council. I know you're going to ask me about how one becomes high sheriff, but I knew 5 years in advance about this role. I was deputy portfolio holder for public health during COVID, which was interesting. And after that, I asked for a quiet role leading up to this role. And so very kindly, I was to be a very quiet role, which was vice chairman. Not a lot to do. But 3 weeks into the role, the poor chairman had a stroke. Luckily, he didn't die, but it was challenging for him to chair 7-hour meetings. So I was asked to step up to be the chairman. So they put back my high sheriff role another year. So I had a long time to prepare for this role.
You said you knew 5 years ahead.
Yes.
So that means that there must be a sort of a list ready.
Oh, yes.
And I have a sense, again, that maybe because the one holding the post maybe doesn't survive the year.
It's really interesting to know why that's happened. I think it's nice to have a couple in reserve, is generally three or four. Yeah. And you're right, people's circumstances can change. And we go up to the Royal Courts of Justice for 3 years in advance. Our names are called out. And occasionally we hear that that person isn't standing for a certain reason. But not many. Most people, once they've made the commitment, they do go ahead and become a high sheriff. Each county has a nomination panel, and it's made up from people who know the county pretty well. So it will be faith, it will be from lieutenancy, from educational, from those establishments, basically. And they will discuss people that they've encountered in the last year or so, and they will come to, hopefully, a consensus. And then that person is asked. So it's completely out of the blue, which is a lovely honour for one, because most things we put our names forward. So for me, and with its tradition, it's the greatest honour of anything I've done.
You are nominated, and then the monarch has to effectively sign off. It's an amusing little...
Well, it is,
the
because...
The pricking with a bodkin.
It is, and I've actually got a picture of the bodkin, because we, at one of our training sessions, it was passed round by a gentleman from the Privy Council. There's a couple of stories, but the one I think is probably true is that names written on vellum can be scratched off. And because high sheriffs had to collect taxes, quite a few didn't like the idea. So one thing that the monarch decided to do was to prick a hole in the vellum next to their name. So it was there in literally stuck through the vellum. We were told that this happened. I thought, nah, can't believe it did. Actually, the king does it. And I just think that is fabulous. What an amazing English tradition. So, yes, so our names are pricked. And that's only about a month before we become the High Sheriff.
Another story says that it was Elizabeth I who started off because she didn't have a pen.
Yes.
So she couldn't sign it because she didn't have a pen. So she got her bodkin out, which of course is like a sewing needle, isn't it?
Yes.
So sort of thing, poked the hole with it.
Yeah.
And another story is that it was because the kings in those early days couldn't sign their name. They didn't know how to. But all these are
brilliant.
Apocryphal stories.
Yeah, but it's still, isn't it
the process
delicious to hear that, though? They're still doing it.
Right. The monarch does sign the whole, I believe there is a...
And we actually get a royal warrant asking us to become the High Sheriff, which is a very nice thing to keep.
You've been in politics a long time, but you're not very political in the sense of party political.
I dislike politics hugely. I like being a community leader and getting things done. And I do feel that it's all gone completely mad, and that people have got to remember that politics, well, opposition is only there for checks and balances. It doesn't mean one has to have opposing views or policies. But this is a non-political role. So I had to stand down for 6 months before I took this role. Very few politicians actually have had this role. I'm sure in history they were very involved with what was going on, because they'd be the type of people that no doubt would be, well, you remember the mayor of St Albans was always chief magistrate. Quite a few high sheriffs have been magistrates. So there is a bit of a crossover. And what's lovely, Rob, is that there are very few people helicoptering the whole county. If you think about the people who, the county, possibly the bishop, the Lord Lieutenant, but there aren't many. So the beauty of this role is for me to see something happening in Royston that's not happening in Watford or vice versa, and being able to share that knowledge. So I think now they're looking more for networkers that can bring things together and make things happen. Yes. The Lord Lieutenant is the number one in the county, but I am the monarch's representative for law and order. But, Robert knows I say this, he's a new kid on the block. He's only been around since 1547. And the reason is, after Henry VIII died, there was a lot of unrest. And so the next king moved the responsibility of the military from the High Sheriff to the Lord Lieutenant. But as time has gone by, and they're actually Lord Lieutenants until they're 75, so they've got a big period to do great work and to shape things within the county.
Because their role included raising a militia and so on for the king. When the king needed an army to fight somebody, he would get the Lord Lieutenants to get the troops.
That was the main role.
That's right.
Yes.
Your role is in the legal and you don't have any direct influence over the courts, presumably.
I don't now. As I said, I did until late 19th century. Yeah. And I would have been literally signing off hangings and checking the ropes and everything else. So I'm so glad I still don't have to do any of those things. For centuries, the High Sheriff would have been the busiest person in the county. I don't know whether you've met lovely lady Dorothy Abel Smith. Her father was High Sheriff of Hertfordshire when the Queen was crowned. And in those days, they went to the coronation because, as you know, they let a lot more people in. And she got to sit outside, and she was saying her father had four events in that year. And of course, I can have four events in a day. So I think we've now gone back to being one of the busiest people in the county.
What do you actually do? I mean, you very kindly come in here and you're telling us about this, and this will reach an audience of people who live locally. So there'll be a greater understanding of what is the role of the High Sheriff and so on. Brilliant.
As I said, I'm basically the figurehead for the police, law and order, emergency services, those sorts of things.
As the figurehead, what does that mean?
I'll go and give awards at the, you know, at all the police awards and the cadets and all those sorts of things. But for me, the real busy time is that we are now encouraged to have a theme. So every High Sheriff chooses a theme. And possibly because I'd been chairman of the county council and dealing with things like potholes and budgets, didn't want anything too depressing. You know, often it's knife crime or domestic abuse, which I'm still involved with all those things. But with my athletic background, I've chosen sport for good. And I sit on the board of the Heart Sports Partnership, and I was reading the agenda one day, and so much funding now that comes through is not so much for pure sport, but it's for physical activity, and a lot of it is to deter crime. It just rang a bell. I just thought, that is brilliant. So if you think about the desistance of crime, mental well-being, especially after COVID, educational attainment, the workplace. I'm nearly 12 weeks into my role, and it's been like an enormous audit in the county to see what's going on. I've seen some fantastic things that are actually happening. I think we've all got to remember that most criminals are addicts, and that's generally come from a trauma in their childhood. And the emotional trauma that they faced, they become addicts and they try and shut out that pain with drugs, alcohol, whatever. And of course, sport can take that place. And I realised when I was running, my mother was ill when I was a year old. We were separated for 6 months, which sets up an abandonment syndrome, which is very painful, but not consciously. So I realised that I could pound pavements. And I think most endurance athletes are probably doing something like that. So how exciting if we can get these young or even older people into doing activities. And I've seen it firsthand. I've been in the Crown Court with our wonderful District Judge, Lana Wood, and there's a Chance and Consequence, a C2 programme, where rather than these multiple offenders that are in and out of jail for doing shoplifting or whatever, they're giving them an alternative to try and change that addiction, a way of life. And one after the other came into the court, and Lana was saying, what do you like best about your course? Tennis, they'd say. Fishing, they'd say. The gym. So this is remarkable, turning people round. So all sorts of exciting things. Probation, I've challenged them to try and come up with something, and they are looking at, again, a one-to-one programme to try and get people into gym-type exercises, which is fully funded. So very exciting things ahead. With the Heart Sports Partnership that I've been working with as well, I'm going round and giving awards around the county for lifetime achievement and for community champions who've made a difference. There've been people like the old boy that's actually maintained the cricket square for 65 years, very quietly, doesn't want any fuss. It's a couple doing wonderful work for people with Parkinson's that helps them to do chair-based exercises and help them with those sorts of things. That's wonderful to be able to go out and see who these heroes are. So if you hear of any, then please let me know.
You've talked about what you're doing. So do you have any ambitions or any great thing that you want to see as a result of your particular time as the High Sheriff?
One of my ambitions is to make this role as widely known as I can. That's going very well, particularly with children, because when I go to these events like park runs or whatever, I'm standing there in my outfit and I always say, do you think you've come to a pantomime? And then I can explain what it is. And of course, they all want to be one now. So I think that's very, very important. Otherwise, these roles will go. And to try and arrange a royal visit now is pretty impossible with the slimming of the royal family. And there are very few people to thank and affirm charities and volunteers for the great work they're doing. So that would be probably what I'd like to do. And it did help being the first item on the news the day after the general election. I think on every channel, you know, I, Annie Brewster, returning officer, whatever. So I think that was quite a good thing to show what high sheriffs do in funny hats.
Because you're not paid to do the job.
No, it's completely self-funded, which I think is the right thing to do, because otherwise the public could look at this and say, well, that looks like a nice jolly strutting around in shiny shoes, having a lovely time. No, it is all down to the High Sheriff.
Do you have any advisers, or did you have the freedom, if you like, and the responsibility of actually working out how you can maximise the value of the year?
I think that's a problem a lot of High Sheriffs actually cite, that there isn't really anybody telling them, are they doing a good job or a bad job? I mean, there is wonderful High Sheriff Association. Past High Sheriffs are very supportive. And I think every High Sheriff is nervous before they start, you know, am I going to be able to make a difference? And I wasn't sure quite what my theme would be. But then suddenly realising things like, I'm going to all the park runs, which are free, going to all the health walks. People don't realise that in almost every town, there's fantastic volunteers leading people on sometimes first steps where it's only 20 minutes, you know, with walking sticks, those sorts of things. Park play, where every Saturday morning there's 2 hours in most parks with young keen ambassadors there with all the kit to play. I think for me, it's been wonderful because I could be like a walking sponge to absorb what's going on, but then sharing it out with other people and encouraging new ideas as well. I'd like to challenge companies, because I do wonder how many of those are actually supporting their employees to be active. You know, I've heard very sorry tales of people working at home now and their longest walk is to the fridge and back. And you think when we used to work in London or something, we were keeping very active.
We could literally go on forever, because you were so enthusiastic about it. It's wonderful. You've always have been enthusiastic about everything done. I always put that back to the fact you used to run as a child. Thank you very much indeed for your time, and it's been fascinating. I have learned so much.
Absolute pleasure, Rob, and well done for all you do here. It's fabulous.